listeners, welcome to another episode of the Snowy's Camping Show, joined by myself, Ben, and Lauren, as usual. Before we jump into our content, make sure you subscribe either by YouTube or your favorite podcast app. You can join in on the conversation on everything we talk about here and anything camping related on the Snowy's Camping Banter Facebook group. Mm-hmm. And there's something else I was going to say, but I've forgotten what it was. It can't have been that important. So let's jump into the content. Today, talking about driving safely. Mm-hmm. Now, you said this was
a request.
I didn't see where it was requested, but someone's written in or asked that we comment on driving safely. Now, we're not experts on driving safely, but we can give our 2 cents worth on what we do to stay safe.
I get a little bit of road rage. Not gonna lie. So I do have opinions on how people should drive safely.
this could be interesting. Was going to be a short episode.
It could not go really for
a while. So we might just have to pull you back a little bit.
I'll behave myself.
I just said let's jump into the content. Now I'm going to say before we jump into the content, we'll do our usual, because we've added a few fun segments, new gear segment at the start of each episode. Mm-hmm. Long time coming and kind of exciting.
Very long time. I reckon it's nearly, 10 years?
Yeah, well, it's been long. They've maybe revamped some packaging and some colours, but it's largely been the same for a long time. So this is kind of, it's funny that it's exciting about such a simple product.
Well, I'm excited.
Well, I am, yeah. But it's Sea to Summit have revamped their whole dry bag, storage bag.
Stuff sack. Range.
Now, I've seen some of it and it looks pretty schmick. Some of the things that have come through, as with all Sea to Summit stuff, it's usually what it is, well thought out from the use case right through to the design and functionality and materials. They test and
everything you can think of, they've thought of.
They seem to have, yeah.
Yep.
And if they haven't, then they sort it out.
Sometimes I even have their gear and I'm like, when I'm just, looking at it, I'm like, what on earth is this for?
Yeah.
And then when I go to actually use the product intrinsically, I'm like, oh, I wish they had this. And it's like, oh, they do.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. There's an answer for everything.
And they know everything.
What it's for as well. So,
yeah.
So it's the dry bag stuff sacks. Then that includes like dry bags that go over the shoulder. They've got some backpack styles and then I'm assuming all that is included.
Like kayaking, if you want to use them in your hiking pack to keep things dry. Yep. Like I put first aid kit stuff in them, use one for wet tea towels and sponges and stuff for dish. They're just so handy.
So all their dry bags, the clips that are on the dry bags, the buckles, clips, everything are there for a functional reason. Draw top bags. There's some cells, like zip top cells with water resistant zips that are kind of see-through. It'll be an awesome.
So
it sounds like a really boring, like we're going bags and pockets, but it'll be really well thought out. And I think they're moving towards reducing their packaging
as well,
all of that as well. So that's certainly an eco element to that.
And Low Alpine is a new brand for Snowies that we've recently started stocking.
We have had it before. Way back.
Okay, my time.
But we've just brought it back in again. Cool. I'm not sure why we drifted away from it, but I've had a Low Alpine pack, one or two Low Alpine packs, and they're a really big brand sort of in Europe and maybe the US. I'm not sure about US, but they are a really good quality brand. And I know I've sold their trekking rucksacks a bit, but the big volume ones. And they've got some really good value stuff.
German.
I wish I'd looked at that beforehand. Yeah. I think that it is European, but I have a feeling it might actually even be UK based. So we should have looked at that before we started. But it's an international
Lisa
brand.
Was saying she still has one of her Low Alpines from back when we used to stock them.
Yeah, I've got
Lisa's our travel shoe guru.
Okay. I've got a day pack that I've had for 15 years. It's got a little hole at the top where the grab handle is that the fabric's just separated, but otherwise it's still perfectly functional.
So that's really good.
So I think at the stage of sitting down recording this, there was a few models come in, but we're getting a heap more.
Yeah, we've got a few more coming through too. Yep.
So driving safely, basics of packing your car, kind of covered this a fair bit
the first thing in terms of you want to go camping and you want to drive safely, pack your car safely.
Mean not everything goes on the roof rack. You've got to pack it so weight's down low in the car so the center of gravity is safe. you've got to pack it such that the people inside the car are safe. So a cargo barrier is a really useful thing. If you haven't got a cargo barrier, try and secure it all. You've got to think if there was an accident, how many of those things in your car are suddenly projectiles that are going to keep going at 100 after your car stops?
Correct.
And try and keep all that safe inside the car.
Yeah, and exactly right. If you're going on windy roads, or last thing you want to do is have a car that's not balanced properly.
Mm-hmm. Try and contain loose items, particularly sharp ones, in tubs and things. Strap it all down if you can.
Yep. Being aware of your weather conditions and or traffic conditions before you go. Now, an example of this is going to be late last year when we travelled up to Millmerran for the Camp Oven Festival.
Oh, yeah, you had a hell of a drive, didn't you?
My partner and I drove up and it was a bit of a hell of a drive because obviously there was a lot of flooding that was going on throughout New South Wales and Queensland. We didn't think it would be that big a deal, sort of the avenue that we were taking from Adelaide, which was mostly via the Newell Highway, I think it's called.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not across roads.
Is it the Newell Highway,
the one that goes across Hay Plain? Anyway, we ended up with so many redirections.
Yep.
And so many. Even Google, like we mostly rely on Google Maps.
Mm-hmm.
And for the most part, that's up to date. But even that wasn't across a lot of it. And with things changing so rapidly, and, you know, we went quite late at night and a whole element of factors there because we just assumed without double checking that it was just going to be clear way the whole way through. So, yeah, just be aware of things like that.
So that's checking for floods and sort of big events, but also rain and or heat. Like traveling safely also means if you're going a long distance in the heat with that many facilities, that you're going with enough water and food. If you're traveling in the rain, you're driving safely as per the conditions. You don't want to be aquaplaning or something with a car loaded to the gunnels.
Yeah.
And
also sort of traffic conditions as well. Like I've done some other big road trips again up through to Queensland and super, super large stretches of the highways like Bruce Highway and stuff, roadworks and like hours on end and like unfinished roads and all sorts of stuff. So just be mindful of that stuff.
Which leads to the next point, which is planning departure time around.
I'm guilty
because I don't think I've ever
left on time.
Yeah. You don't want to be rushing. It's just it adds stress. And then by the time you get to camp, you had this idea you're going to be here at a certain time and you're there later and you're rushed and you're frazzled and it's not where you want to be when you get to camp. So plan to leave early. But you know what? If you do leave later, just roll with it and have a break if you need. Don't push it and arrive exhausted before you've even started your weekend.
Yeah.
So give yourself time. Don't plan too many distance or too big a distance.
Yeah, and if you feel like you're rushing, you're potentially going to be driving less safely from the get-go.
Absolutely. Regular breaks, oh my gosh, that's important for me. I get sitting too long and I just kind of my back stiffens up being tall and skinny like I am. I've got to get out and walk around. Same as when I'm at work. I've got to get up and walk around. If I know it's going to be a long day at the wheel, I know that I'm going to feel stiff all over that night. Yeah. But regular stops and not just like get out, stretch and back in the car, get out and actually go for a walk for a kilometer or something like that. Actually stretch the muscles out. It also helps you breathe in some more oxygen, maybe open the windows on the car, get some fresh air through the car. So you've got
sometimes
good
even I do
car.
Like 20 star jumps or, you know, I might run as fast as I can to a pole on the other side of the park and just walk back and just do some stuff that really gets your heart pumping and your blood moving and get your body not feeling so stagnant.
Yeah. If you've got kids, race the kids in those things. Take a small soccer ball or something, kick it around.
Yeah.
Just to use a bit of energy. Yeah.
And keep your windscreen clean as wherever possible.
Yeah.
If you're filling up for fuel or you're having a stop, go via a servo, keep your windscreen clean.
If you're having a squint because of the glare, especially late in the day, glare on the windscreen.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just keep it clean.
Yeah. And if you've got heaps of bugs, I mean, I don't know about you, and this could be a total tangent, but when I was a kid, your windscreen was covered in bugs. Like every town, you'd have to stop and clean them off.
Mm.
Nowadays, I could go for a 12-hour trip and not have to clean my windscreen once.
Yeah, I wouldn't. I mean, I had some certain areas. I had a fair few when I travelled for long distances, but Yeah, not
biodiversity, not folks. Anyway, back to the matter at hand. yeah, having a clean windscreen is really important. Yeah.
Staying alert through, is that where you're going next, or did you have something?
No, stay alert.
Sorry. Conversations, podcasts,
sometimes music, having like just a bag of snakes, even sometimes if you're starting to feel a little bit flat.
But don't overdo it at the start because then you crash.
Don't overdo it. 100%. Take breaks whenever you need to take them. If you need to pull over and just close your eyes, pull over somewhere safe and close your eyes. Like, don't even risk it.
Mm.
But even just something like having a bag of snakes in your car and you just having a couple of lolly snakes or whatever, yep, can make you feel really good, give you a bit of sugar boost.
Yeah.
Talking to people, I know with my partner, sometimes as a passenger, because he does most of the driving, only because he can't really relax if he's a passenger, if that makes sense. Like, yeah. I'm a capable and competent driver, but yeah, it's just the way that his mind is and whatever. He just prefers to do majority of the driving.
Yep.
But sometimes if I'm feeling sleepy, I have to check in with him and be like, is it okay with you if I fall asleep? Because sometimes even just me falling asleep ends up making him more drowsy and stuff like that. Yeah. So just have a good partnership with whoever you're driving with. Make sure wherever possible you're driving with someone else who can drive.
Yep.
Take it in turns, or at least have your partner have habits and little things that you can do to help keep each other alert.
And share that load as well.
Share the load.
Switch the driving around. I'm kind of the same. I enjoy driving and I enjoy being on the highway. So I end up doing most of the driving just because I enjoy it more than my wife. But my wife pushes it too, but I'm quite aware if I should just have some time out and sit in the passenger seat and take my eyes off the road and look around a little bit more just to rejuvenate. So, yeah, that's really important. We've noted here practice.
The only thing I wanted to mention on that is sometimes be aware that coffee and caffeine can actually have the opposite effect. So if you're feeling pretty tired, especially if it's getting more towards the later end of the day and you've still got a fair way to go, having a coffee can actually then in an hour or two make you even more tired than if you didn't have the coffee.
Yeah.
It was really interesting. I actually read a book, Save Our Sleep, totally sort of irrelevant, another tangent as I do, but they were talking about how the mechanisms of caffeine work and how it can actually be quite dangerous if you're using that as a primary method to potentially stave off sleep or keep you alert. So bear in mind that if that's something that you like, I've got another couple of hours to go, I'll just rely on coffee, that's not necessarily going to be safe. It might be better if you're really struggling to just pull over and have a nap.
I think you got to listen to your body. Also, I enjoy coffee in the mornings. I like coffee. It gets me started. But there's a certain point, like early afternoon, that I know I'm not going to have a coffee later than this because I actually feel worse.
Yeah.
And then by the time I get to camp and I'm trying to go to sleep, my body doesn't know what's going on. I'm tired, but I'm awake and you feel worse. So it's probably not the best way to manage it. Now, we mentioned practice. I think that's a really important one.
Really important.
If you've just driven around the city, for half hour to 1 hour kind of stints, and you go, I'm going to go camping and I'm going to drive from Adelaide to Darwin, you're going to struggle, most likely going to struggle if you're going to try and do that in like 4 days.
Yeah.
You're going to have to give yourself a chance to adjust to sitting down in the seat, open highway driving.
That's right. And it's like training your brain into a different level of awareness, because you do sort of get into, it's almost sometimes you're just sitting there, you're driving in 110, you're on a straight road, you just sort of get in a zone.
In a trance.
And sometimes if you're not good at, if you haven't had a lot of experience in that and you haven't had that practice, your brain is not trained in the ways that you need to be aware when you are driving long roads.
Mm.
And that can be something as left field as when there's a car coming your way being aware of the person who's driving that car and having a quick check of, are they being attentive, or are they, where are they looking with their eyes? It's not just about making sure that your vehicle is staying in between the lines on the right side of the road. It's also about being aware of the people around you, being aware of wildlife, of changes in road texture, like literally so many different factors that you need to be aware of. And it's a different way. It's a different sort of state of awareness than average driving.
The distance between you and the car in front of you, the distance between the car coming towards you for overtaking. Yep. There's also not as much stimulation with lights, other people around you. You could be on that road, straight road, for an hour or more and not see anyone else. So all you're looking at is the bitumen and a white line. And if you're driving through Central Australia, for example,
some smudge on the side,
not a lot,
or
on
nothing
the side.
Else.
So,
yeah,
so it's just more of the same. So you can get in a trance. So yeah, it's important to practice, get used to that, and know how to keep yourself alert.
Yep. Like, I mean, you know, we're in South Australia, so doing things like trips down to Victor Harbour and back, you know, it's like an hour and a half drive. If you're not used to anything more than the city, taking day trips that take you for an hour, going camping maybe 2 or 3 hours away, do that a couple of times, maybe just a quick, you know, 5 or 6 hour drive, just practice. If you're towing, consider getting a towing course or doing a towing course.
Because I don't tow, but I understand that that changes how you drive completely. Yeah. Extra weight, how it handles, where road trains going by with a caravan on. There's a lot of considerations there. So be aware of those things. Don't be scared of it. Be aware that you're not necessarily just going to hitch up a trailer and drive for 4 hours and be fine.
Yeah. You also, if you're doing some night driving,
additional lights.
Additional lighting is a must, and I would never have thought it was that big a deal until we put the light bar on the van.
Yeah.
Totally changes how, like, it's just completely revolutionizes your night driving experience. Yeah. You just feel so much safer. You have so much more visibility. You don't have to go crazy and overboard, but, 100% invest in additional lighting.
Really alert at nighttime as well, particularly at dusk and dawn with animals on the road. But I know when I'm driving, if you're tired and not driving, it's a really bad mix. Like don't do that. You want to be alert if you're not driving, which contradicts when you maybe should be awake, right? Because you're supposed to be tired at night. So just be really aware of driving at night that you need to be extra alert, movement on the side of the road, and definitely extra.
And you
light
do need to be extra alert because it's more likely that, in my opinion, it's more likely that you'll potentially notice things a bit later than you would if it was during the day. And that means that your braking time and how you need to adjust your vehicle and all that stuff needs to change as well.
You mean because the visibility is not as big?
Yeah,
if an
visibility
animal's running
is not
from the
as
side,
great.
You don't see it till it's in your light beam.
Because it's like an example of we travelled a really long way, and that meant we were getting somewhere at 2 o'clock in the morning, which, you know, don't 100% recommend, but it was something that had to be done. And I reckon between midnight and one, we went through this section of national park, and like legitimately every 100 meters was a giant wombat, which would kill everybody. You know what I mean?
Wreck your car as
wreck
well.
Wreck your car, wreck your wombat, wreck you. Yeah, exactly. And so in the big van loaded up, we were quite heavy on that trip. Braking is a lot different than if you're driving around town or you're going on shorter trips. Just being aware of that and how your reaction time and your braking time and all that. It's just practice.
That comes back to the vehicle being loaded properly too. If you've got a top heavy vehicle, you suddenly brake and swerve.
Yeah.
You're in a rollover situation.
Yeah, totally. Yep.
Now the channels, I meant to research beforehand because it used to be, and there's still the 40 channel, so it still is, but channel 40 is kind of like your highway channel, and 18 for caravanners, campers for, and some four-wheel drive convoys, but there's the 80 channel UHF radios now.
Yeah.
When you get a UHF radio, it almost always comes with a user manual that outlines just what all the channels are for.
Yeah.
So we could say here right now what they all are, but I forget and have to refer to it all the time. But
pretty much the only ones that I would have ever used is like 18 or 40, I reckon, in terms of just generic driving.
Yeah, I usually have mine on scan.
Yeah.
Just because then you're listening out for if anyone is using any channel and needs help, you're aware of what's going on. Also might be aware of like roadworks ahead, might be using a channel. You can get a heads up on, I can expect this up ahead. So I scan, but transmit usually on 40 or 18 or a channel that you've specifically chosen In line with the convoy that you're traveling in.
Yeah.
But you need to choose that in line with what you're allowed to use, because there are some stations you can't use for just general use. It's there for emergency. So be aware of what channels to use.
Yeah.
And listen to it. Have it on scan so that you know what's upcoming.
Yeah.
Accidents ahead, people that need help behind you, something like that.
Yeah. So sharing the roads with trucks is really important, because like I've heard, you know, read posts and social media and news articles and all of that sort of jazz. We're going on a holiday. They're trying to do their job. Mm-hmm. And that is their job. Their job is to literally drive endlessly all across the country. So they know what they're doing.
Yep.
You know, they're driving professionals, and it's important for the roads to be safe for them as much as it is for us. And we actually prefer driving with trucks around us than we do with cars.
You can save a lot of fuel if you sit behind a truck at a safe distance,
in
their slipstream. You can save a lot of fuel.
So much fuel can be saved doing that, because that's essentially what we do, especially if we're driving later at night. We're just like, let's find a truck. And it's so great. And obviously you want to, as you said, assess the distance that you've got between them. Wherever possible, are they a massive road train, or are they just a standard long hauler? Like, it's just be really careful, because if it's a big road train, you're going to need to take a bit more distance back from them than if it's just a smaller truck, because obviously you've got to consider their braking, you know, time and.
Yep. And then animals and stuff become less of an issue at night too. I love being behind a truck for that reason, that trucks have got massive bull bars, and while I don't like any animal to be hit, I would rather that truck hit that animal.
And they've got those giant lights, and they're totally just blasting the way through, and it's so great.
Don't push past trucks. And if you do, I don't know if we talked about overtaking here or passing trucks.
Oh, yeah, we have. Yeah.
We'll talk about trucks overtaking shortly. But you've got – now, these indicators like to help overtake. I'm really hesitant to use those. And while most truckies, I'm sure, are fine, I prefer to make my own judgment when the family's in the car as to when I overtake.
Oh, it's not. I agree with you, and I wouldn't just blindly overtake just because a truck says. Sitting behind a truck and they've, you know, if you're not familiar with driving, usually if you're behind a truck and their right indicator flashes a couple of times, that's them trying to signal to you that it's safe to overtake them if you wish to do that. And generally they know if you want to overtake them because you're coming up fast or you're a bit closer to them than what you would be if you were happy to sit behind them, right? But they can see and I can't. And I'm going to trust a truckie's call on that over my own call sitting behind a truck.
Yep.
Does that make sense? No,
you're absolutely right. They're also higher. They can see further. I guess the point of what I'm saying is don't feel like you have to. If you're happy sitting there, it's not the truckie saying you have to overtake.
Yep.
It's saying it's safe. They're just letting you know
if you want to, that's what will happen.
But still use your own judgment. If you pull out and there's a car there or something, or you see a truck, the truckie might think, oh, they got plenty of time. You know your vehicle, and you can work out if you've actually got time to get past the trucks, which can be pretty long sometimes, and they're double. You then make an assessment yourself after that truckie said it's safe, whether you want to do that or not.
But that's
don't
right.
feel like you have to.
Don't ever overtake if you're not 100% confident to do so.
Yep.
Regardless.
If you're on a radio too, you might be able to communicate with them as well. Yeah.
But it works in reverse as well though. Like if you've got a truck coming up to you and you're not driving fast and you know that that truck's going to want to pass you, you can use exactly the same signal. Obviously you don't have as good a visibility as that truck. So they're going to be able to know if it's safe or not. But what you're doing by flashing your indicator a couple of times is you're letting them know
I'm ready.
That you're ready for them to pass you when they want to.
Yep.
Generally, if that happens, just ease off the accelerator and just drop back a bit. Like, I'm not talking put your brakes on or anything, but just they're big, they're heavy, they're mm-hmm. long. Just ease off a bit. That gives them a bit of a chance to yep. do what they need to do safely.
Yep.
And another thing that we do, which I think is common, and I've been told this by truck drivers too, by the way, mm-hmm. is that if a truck is overtaking you and they're clear of your vehicle, flash them twice with your high beams mm-hmm. because that lets them know that they can merge back left in front of you and they're fully yep. clear, because they might not be able to see,
yeah.
obviously can't gauge that.
Long way to judge whether it's clear or not. Yep.
So that's something that's helpful. And what another thing that we do is right, left, right, or left, right, left, or whatever. Doing that sort of indicator thing is a thank you. And we do that all the time. If we're coming up behind a truck and they've given us that indication that it's safe to overpass and we just pop back in front of them, that's what we do. And it's a really good way of, if you don't have a UHF radio, of being able to communicate with truckies and sort of yep. understand how to drive safely and share the road with them.
I realize our next point I touched on before, but the truck slipstream in efficiency. Yeah. But I want to elaborate on that and saying, don't sit right up behind the truck, because if you're right up behind the truck, they cannot see you.
Mm-hmm.
Hence they've signs on the back of the truck that say, if you can't see my mirrors, I can't see you.
Correct.
So you got to pull back to such a point that you can see the mirror, and that can seem like a really long distance. But that's, to drive safely, that's just how it needs to be. And it's the same thing with overtaking. You need a bit of space to get some speed up to overtake the truck, and you don't want to be trying to speed up in the outer lane. You want to have some speed by the time you're pulling out. So you need that space to speed up.
Completely agree with you there. Yep. And for people who might be listening and don't know what a slipstream is, it's just the disturbance in the air behind the truck, because the air is pushing its way. I mean, the truck is pushing its way through the air and the air's literally separating. And then as the truck moves past, the air's just rushing back in to fill the space that the truck's forced its way through the ether, or whatever you want to call it. And in that sort of turbulence and space where the air hasn't come back in together is the slipstream, which means there's less resistance for your own car to having to plow through and separate that air, basically.
Same concept that race drivers,
cyclists
use. You see them sitting right in behind each other because they switch, because the person in front's copping the brunt of the wind or the air resistance, and the rest are just sitting right behind.
I had someone do that when I was riding home from work.
I do it all the time.
Not long ago, but I'm on like my giant big steel Dutch bike.
Oh, you were in front.
And I was in front, and it was a horrible headwind. And I'm like, I'm doing all the work riding my armchair bike, and you're just sitting behind me.
I pick a fit person and stinking behind.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
But I don't mind if they want me to go in front for a little bit.
Yeah. The other last thing I'd probably chuck in, because I think we're almost finished wrapping up on this one, is when trucks are passing in the opposite direction. So you're going north and they're coming south. You know, you're in your opposite lanes, you're passing each other.
Mm-hmm.
We always hug the left-hand side of the road as much as safely possible when a truck's passing, and just brace yourself, because sometimes there can be so much whirly winds and whatever you call it coming off that truck as it thunders past you, especially when they're going fast. And if you're not ready for it, it can throw your car around.
And if you've got a caravan, it's even worse.
Yes. Yep. And also if the truck has got trailers, you don't know what the trailers could be doing. You know what I mean? Like they could be bouncing around a little bit, and you just want to give them as much berth as you can when they're going the other way, and just be prepared with your own car.
If there's a strong crosswind and we're talking, you know, trucks with two or three trailers on the back, they can kick around a lot at the back, and it can be quite scary watching a truck in windy conditions, how much that rear trailer will sway from side to side. So you just got to be aware when they're coming the other way that unlikely that it's going to happen, but it could, right? And you wouldn't want to be on the receiving end of the trailer moving around like that. So, and it certainly kicks you around a lot.
Yeah. I think
– all practice.
I think the overall key, the overall takeaway with driving safely is not to be complacent, even though it seems like potentially you could be, because there's not much going on a long haul trip.
Yeah.
But don't be complacent and just practice.
Yeah.
Practice, 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 practice.
So that you're always alert. Don't drive tired.
Don't drive tired. Practice.
Keen to hear others' opinions who are seasoned outback highway drivers, I suppose. Yep. Or not even outback highway, just long distance haul drivers, truckers and people who've been on the caravan circuit for a long time. Just all these little things help everyone, just makes a safer spot for everyone out camping.
Yeah, absolutely.
And we didn't have a
story. Also, if there's any truck drivers out there who listen to our show.
Yeah.
If you've got any tips or information.
I reckon, yeah, I can't put my finger on just names, but I'm pretty sure I've had conversations with people in our Facebook group that have said they used to drive trucks and stuff. So
yeah.
Some common listeners. So I'm sure they've got some feedback on that.
Yeah.
No, we didn't have a story of the week this week, but I just think we could mention. Because
there wasn't really anything that we found that was relevant or interesting.
A group of us did do a run yesterday, though. We could talk about that.
Oh, yeah. That'd be in the past when this episode, by the time this episode goes live.
Was a run here in South Australia that we sponsored. Six of us ran it.
Six of us from our team, right? I wasn't included.
Well, Brett took his daughter as well. You didn't do it, yeah.
I didn't do it. I was with another colleague of ours at a knitting and yarn fair.
Well, gee. Oh, damn it. If only you told me.
Yeah, you missed it.
So if it was myself and
Big Trail Run.
Others did
Conquer the 10Ks.
Conquer the Summit, it's called, yep.
Jake and Larry. Jake and Larry, who's sitting in the other room recording our podcast, pulled off a 20K.
No training,
pulled off a 20K. I think one of the last times he did it, he had to finish it without his shoes because his blisters were so bad.
He kept his shoes on this time.
He kept them on this time.
He didn't get out of his seat for the meeting this morning, so I think his legs are sore. Mine are sore after 10. I haven't done a lot of training.
Yeah.
But it's a bit of fun just getting out in the community. So
totally.
That was a last-minute addition to our story of the week. But we were going to ask our listeners to fill in this gap. What's your story of the week?
What's your story of the week?
So if you have got a cool story, then do it. Yeah, put it on there on our Facebook. Snowy's Camping Banter.
Snowy's Camping Banter.
That's it.
We're on YouTube, obviously.
We're just over 30 minutes.
Cool.
We almost did it.
We managed to pull it back a bit this time.
All right. Before we get to 40, we'll say goodbye.
Okay. Catch you later.
See you next time.